Hey, welcome back to A View from the Couch. My name is Rich Davenport.
I'm Jennifer Davenport.
And we are going to talk about Scream. No, not the 1996 movie about a ghostface killer who kills a bunch of teenagers in Woodsboro, California. No, no, we're talking about the 2022 film Scream, which is about a ghostface killer that kills a bunch of teenagers in Woodsboro, California. Is this, wait a minute. What? Oh, I see.
It's a requel.
It's a requel. They did the Halloween and Candyman thing where they just named it the name of the original film.
Apparently it's the thing to do now.
It is the thing to do. What's up with that? It's, you know me and the titles thing, right?
Yes. That, yes. Like, you've
my God. Like I just, come on, make sense with the titles, right? You just have to just make sense with the titles. If this is a sequel, put the number after it or put a subtitle after it. That's all you need. Like they did. I blame this on, I think The Thing is probably the one that really started this trend back in 2011. Because it's a prequel to John Carpenter's 1982 The Thing, but it's just called The Thing. And I don't understand why. I just don't understand why, because it's not a remake. This movie mm-hmm. is not a remake. Halloween is
no,
not
it's a continuation
remake.
Of the story.
Right. Halloween is not a remake. Candyman mm-hmm. is not a remake. These movies aren't remakes. Why are you labeling them as if they're remakes? Anyway, I want to set that aside. Today, we're talking about 2022 Scream. So early warning system here, guys. We're going to spoil this movie rotten. So if you have not seen this movie and you don't want to be spoiled, turn off your radio now. That's an homage to Arch Obler's Lights Out, which is an old-timey radio program from the 1930s or 40s or something like that. They would give people, they would say, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now at the beginning of each episode. So
I see.
I fear I've
heard that.
Yeah, I fear that nobody would get that. So that's why I had to kind of.
Oh, I'm sure there's some people that would.
Maybe, I don't know. I feel like I'm like one of the only people anymore that listens to old timey radio programmies. I say programmy because then it sounds like it's got the E at the end, right? Like when it's got an E at the end, programmy, you know? Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, Jen, what is your history with the Scream franchise?
So I have seen all of the previous four Scream movies. I have not seen the television series.
Okay.
The first Scream movie I've seen several times. I don't even know how many times. It is probably my top 10 favorite Halloween horror type movies. I
wow,
really
okay.
like Scream.
All right.
They definitely the second, third, and fourth don't really live up to the first one, but they're there. I actually think I've only seen the fourth one once. I think I saw it for the first time this last fall, but yeah. Anyways, how about you?
Well, yeah, I just to touch on something that you said, they rarely do ever live up to the original, right? There's sequels are just, it's the law of diminishing value, right? And, mm-hmm. and it's just what happens. But yeah, I agree. The first time I saw Scream was in 1997. It was in, not 1996, because it was in the dollar theaters in 97, early 97. I had just broken up with my college girlfriend and I was in a bad, bad place. So I went to the movie theater, which makes no sense because I was in a bad place. Whatever I was going to see, I was not going to like. And I saw this movie and I saw Jerry Maguire and I hated them both. I hated them both with a passion. I thought I was so angry that I thought that Scream was stupid.
Wow.
On subsequent viewings, I have revised that and realized that it was my mood that was putting me
sure.
in that spot. That was causing me to think, you know, I wasn't paying attention to the movie. I was too wrapped up in my own bullshit.
Right. You had other stuff going on.
Other stuff going on. Exactly. So watching the movie for the first time, I didn't actually see the movie. Having seen it again multiple times since, it I think it's actually a brilliant send-up of the horror genre that doesn't quite transcend the its time frame, but it's great for the time capsule of the 1990s and that snarky self-awareness of the 1990s, you know? I've seen all of them. I've seen all of them in theaters, actually, now. The fourth one I saw in... I never saw the fourth one in theaters. Never mind, I take that back. I remember thinking, why are they making the fourth Scream movie? I'll wait for that to come out on video. And so I did. I think the original's great. I think, like you, there's a law of diminishing returns. And this follows that law. This is not to say that the second and third, and even the fourth, don't have some value, but they definitely right. don't stand up to the original.
So, right. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, they're not garbage, but they're... definitely not as good as the first one.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, so this... now, Wes Craven is dead. Wes Craven died, right? Mm-hmm. And this was Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson's baby. This was their baby. So who the hell made this movie?
All right, this movie was directed by Matt Bettinelli Olfin and Tyler Gillette. It was written by James Vanderbilt and Guy Busick.
Okay.
We bring back three of the stars from previous films. I think that these three have been in all of them. We've got Neve Campbell as Sidney Prescott, Courtney Cox as Gail Weathers, and David Arquette as Dewey Riley.
Right. They call them the legacy characters, don't they?
Yeah. 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 But they have been in all five now, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. We bring in Melissa Barrera as Sam Carpenter, Jenna Ortega as Tara Carpenter, Dylan Minette as Wes Hicks, Jack Quaid as Richie Kirsch, Jasmine Savoy Brown as Mindy Meeks, Sonia Amar as Liv McKenzie, Mickey Madison as Amber Freeman, Mason Gooding as Chad Meeks Martin.
That's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son.
Really? Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yep. Okay. And then we also bring back, I think from Scream 3 or 4, Marley Shelton as Deputy Judy Hicks.
Mm-hmm. And you're missing a big one.
Who am I missing?
Skeet Ulrich as Billy Loomis.
He is not listed in the casting. And I don't know if it's because they don't want to give it away yet.
It's because they don't want to give it away. That's him de-aged. They use de-aged makeup on him.
I was wondering if they used previous footage or if they did the de-aging. Now, I'm going to say right up front, the de-aging was terrible.
It was.
I thought it looked terrible.
Yeah, I agree. It was so bad. I called him fake Billy Loomis at first because I thought they just got some other actor that vaguely looked like Skeet Ulrich. But no, that's him. And they de-aged him. It looks so awkward and so off.
It does. And I feel like, how would she? Okay, so he is a figment of the daughter's imagination.
Right.
And he's wearing the clothes he was wearing the night that he was, you know, the big party night that he was killing people.
Right.
But how would she know what he looked like and what he was wearing? I mean, she would know what he looked like, but that specific night, how would she know? Anyways, that's not a big thing, but I thought the de-aging, I felt like if they would have maybe had him a little bit more blurry and not such close-up stuff on it, maybe that would have been a little better because the de-aging just looked terrible.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I have a lot more problems with the Skeet Ulrich cameo than just how he looks and how she knew how he looked, because that could be easily explained away. She's seen the Stab movie.
I suppose, and
if there's any yearbooks at high school, she can find a picture of him. So she could figure out who he is.
That's true.
And she could imagine that up. So, I mean, that's easily explainable, but I have other problems that we'll get into later with that, with that whole thing. So, okay. So the opening of this movie, we have Tara Carpenter, Home Alone, just like in all of our other previous Scream movies, we've got a Home Alone character, a female, who gets a phone call. And it's Ghostface, right? Of course it's Ghostface because it's Scream. She gets attacked. She gets stabbed. We think she's dead, but it turns out she's not.
this is our first time that the opening person survives, correct?
Yeah.
The opening kill scene, they survive.
Yep, absolutely. Every single other one.
Which leads to some of the misdirection at the end.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Right? Like they really, they leaned into that. They really lean into that. So, okay, they go to great lengths to show that Ghostface, during their struggle, he falls and he hits his arm. Because later they're going to try and misdirect that with another character with some bruises, right? There's all kinds of, it's Scream, so there's misdirection everywhere, right?
Right.
So after the initial attack, we cut to Sam, who lives out of town. And we don't know who she is at first, but it turns out she is Tara's estranged sister. And she is told that Tara's stabbed but still alive, and so she and her boyfriend Richie go to the hospital to visit with Tara and make sure that she's okay. And there we get to see Judy Hicks, who is played by Marley Shelton. Is that her name, Marley Shelton? I think it is.
Yes,
Marley Shelton. Yes, it is. It's Heather Graham's stunt double. She looks so much like Heather Graham, it's ridiculous. So at the hospital, we get to meet the new cast. We get to meet Wes Hicks. We get to meet Chad and Mindy Meeks Martin, Amber Freeman, Liv McKenzie. And we also get to kind of meet a little bit more, learn a little bit more about Richie and Sam and Tara, really. We find out that Sam, and again, people, spoilers. I cannot say this enough. Sam is the illegitimate daughter of Billy Loomis. Her mother and Tara's mother had an affair with Billy that birthed Sam, but she convinced Tara's father that Sam was his. And so that's how she kind of kept that all hidden. Apparently, Sam had found her mom's diary in the attic years and years ago. And that was the impetus for her leaving. She left and it caused this rift between Tara and Sam. But that's not all the connections, right? Like everybody here is connected in some way, shape, or form, aren't they?
Right. Right. So you have a group of people that any one of them could be Ghostface, because there is some kind of connection with everybody here.
So what are all the connections? Who do we have? Like, we have Wes Hicks. What's his connection?
All right. So Wes Hicks is the son of the 2011 Scream Ghostface survivor, Judy Hicks. So she's the sheriff.
The deputy in that movie is the sheriff now, right?
Right. Yep. You already mentioned Samantha Carpenter. She is Billy Loomis's daughter.
Right.
We have Chad and Mindy. They are the nephew and niece of the late Randy Meeks. Vince Schneider.
Oh, I didn't mention him, but Vince Schneider is he is Liv's summer fling from the year before.
Oh, right. So the nephew of Stu Mocker.
Vince is the nephew of.
Right, of Stu.
Stu, yeah.
And Amber, she lives in Stu's old house.
So the
only teenager that doesn't have a connection to a legacy character is Liv. She's the weird one.
Right. But it also kind of explains how, like, she just kind of disappears for most of the movie and doesn't show up again until the party at the end. Well, actually, a lot of them just disappear and don't come back.
Well, they're really trying to direct you towards her. They're really pushing you towards her.
Yeah, they do. They do push for that quite a bit. So after we meet everybody there and we get this big reveal, Sam and Richie go to visit Dewey Riley because he still lives in Woodsboro and he knows how to deal with Ghostface, right? But Dewey doesn't care. He says, no, I'm not going to help you, fuck off. And he kicks him out. But then he calls Sid. And he calls Gail to warn them, or not, he doesn't call Gail, he texts Gail, which actually comes up later. He calls Sid and warns her that, Ghostface is back and, don't come to Woodsboro.
But you know they're coming.
Of course they're going to come. Yeah, of course they are. But then he changes his mind and he goes to Mindy and Chad's home. And there they have like the 2022 version of the scene where Randy and Stu and Billy and their girlfriends are all talking shit about who could be the killer. You remember that scene early on in the first Scream movie? So this is that version of that. They go through and they start talking about how like everybody's a suspect, and they bring up that Dewey is, could, you know, Dewey could just as easily be a suspect as everybody else, and why are we relying on him and all that.
Yeah, they've got everybody pointing fingers and why.
Yep, exactly.
And yeah, so here we go again with all the, you know, trying to misdirect you.
Yeah, well, this is when we find out everybody's connection too, right?
Yes, that's when, it is.
Yeah, and that's when they start pointing finger at Sam and saying, well, you're Billy Loomis's daughter. You're the one that makes the most sense. And so she takes off and she's like, fuck off. Then Ghostface ends up murdering Judy and Wes. And what I really love about that scene is they flipped the script on that whole shower thing.
They did.
Right.
Like, instead it's usually, of normally a female being in the shower and being vulnerable, it's a male this time.
It's a male vulnerable in the shower. I thought that was kind of brilliant. There was also a wonderful reference to Psycho. One character says something about, didn't you see the movie Psycho? And you cut to Wes in the shower, but it's that shot of the shower head with the water coming down. That's directly from Psycho. This wonderful homage. I actually exclaimed in the movie theater, like, ah, like something along those lines. Nobody else gave a shit, but I did. I thought it was cool. It was very well done. But so now we've got our next victims. We've got Judy. She's dead. We've got Wes. He's dead. And Gail somehow shows up very quickly from New York. She's in New York. They make reference to this, that Dewey couldn't make it work in New York, so he moved back to Woodsboro. That's across the country, guys. Woodsboro's in California.
Well, maybe she got the text and immediately ran and got a flight and flew there, and it's later in the day.
She's an anchor for a morning show in New York. How does she convince her boss to be like, yeah, go cover the new Woodsboro murders, because you obviously have a connection to it, within that span of time? And arrived just in time for the police investigation into Judy and Wes's death. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get what they're going for, but it just seems a little bit of a stretch, guys. It's a little bit of a stretch.
So back with the group of kids, we get the speech about the requels.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Again, you've got Scream trying to be self-aware of what it's doing.
Yeah.
And it's talking about that. It was kind of funny, kind of like, okay, all right, you know, I don't know if
I loved it. I loved it because it's a complete takedown of the reboot sequel trend while being a reboot sequel. It was a wonderful like attack on the very thing that it is, you know? Like, they're going to do this again later. They're going to talk about like how Stab 8 is actually just called Stab, and that's stupid. They should just put 8 at the end of it. And here we are in this movie. And that's one of the things that I talked about, right? I said this when we were going into this movie. Yeah. Why didn't they just call it Scream 5? This doesn't make any sense. Why are we? And going into the very beginning of this show, this episode, I was talking about, why don't they just put like, this is a takedown of all of that. The arguments that about the titling of it and the version or the methodology of the requel is just, I loved it. I loved it. It's the exact type of self-aware stuff that made Scream what it was back in 96.
So did you catch too, that there was a little jab at Rian Johnson in here too? That the Stab 8 was done by the Knives Out guy.
Yep.
And that there was so many unwelcome changes and it was really controversial.
Mm-hmm. Later they're going to, because Star Wars 8 was The Last Jedi. That was Rian Johnson's movie. And I, if you listen to my other show, Paul and I both love that movie. That movie is fantastic. The changes that they made are definitely welcome in my realm. But later,
everybody's got their own opinions. It's
absolutely, it's, you know, absolutely.
Everybody likes some things, don't like others.
But later on, they're going to attack this toxic fan base stuff. This hashtag release the Snyder cut, the remake the Last Jedi thing. They're going to go directly after that.
let's move on next to the next scene you were talking about with Judy Hicks and Wes Hicks.
Yeah.
And I just have to point out, I have said this before in these scary movies, why do people not lock their doors? You have a serial killer running around and yet doors are not locked.
He did lock the door.
He did, but she didn't.
Judy didn't?
Judy didn't have the door locked.
Oh, when she first got home. Weird, right? Because she actually says to him, hey, don't forget to lock the door behind me when she goes to get the sushi.
Right.
Yeah.
And then she texts the police. Now, how big is Woodsboro? This is my question, because there's a couple things in here that makes me think maybe Woodsboro's a lot bigger than I thought. Now, I thought Woodsboro was kind of like a medium-sized city, but not huge, because everybody knows everybody, right?
Right.
So small to medium size city.
Right.
But yet she texts for the police to get there, and she drives quite a ways to get there.
Right.
And not only does she get brutally murdered, but so does Wes, and the cops still aren't there.
Right.
Okay. So how big is this city? And then there's another scene later where I think it's Gail and Sydney take off to go. No, maybe it's the main characters. Anyways, they take off to leave town or whatever. And then by the time they get to the other side of town, it was like afternoon when they left, bright daylight. And then it was dark by the time they get to the house. And yeah. So I'm like, wait a minute. Their timing is off with the lighting, or the city is massive, you know, I don't know. It's mixed signals.
Yeah. That's just one of those things that happens in Halloween, for crying out loud, you know,
it does.
That could very well be an homage to Halloween, how they drive from
one side of town to the other. And
Jamie Lee Curtis's house when she gets picked up, when they drive from Lori's house to where they're babysitting, with a quick stop at like the hardware store where the sheriff dad is investigating the break-in.
Daylight, yeah.
It's daylight. And then by the time they get to where they're going, it's night.
Right.
Yeah. It could very well be an homage. Here's my problem with the Judy situation, is that she wasn't gone that long. She wasn't that far away yet.
Right.
Why did it take her so long to get back? Because it's in the script, right?
She got lost. I don't know.
She got lost.
Took a wrong turn. I have no idea. Anyways. Just little nitpicks. That's all it was.
Yeah. No, that's okay. So after Wes and Judy are murdered, and there's kind of this like convergence at the scene, Sam and Dewey show up there, and then Dewey reunites with Gail. But then while Gail is doing her newscast thing, Sam and Dewey go to the hospital because they realize that all the sheriffs are at Judy's house.
Uh-huh.
So they go there, and they're attacked by Ghostface, but Dewey stops them. And then Sam, Tara, and Richie escape. Dewey stays to put a bullet in Ghostface's head.
Okay, before you get there, before you get to that point.
Yeah, yep.
I really liked the tension they were building with Tara, because she had a heart monitor on.
Yeah,
and so
that
as
was
stuff
really
was
cool.
happening, her, you could hear her heart increasing, and I thought that was a nice touch, because that I feel like that's very realistic. Your heart would probably start racing,
right? It was cool, because it's supposed to be the audience's heart rate too, right? Like,
yeah,
you're supposed to be invested in this as well, right?
Yes. Yep. Okay, go ahead. I just wanted to point that out.
Good point. So when Dewey goes back to, you know, double tap Ghostface, his phone rings and distracts him for like a split second, and Ghostface kills Dewey. R.I.P. Dewey.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
That was a really violent, brutal one. I have a note on this death,
okay,
but it has to do with the big reveal at the end. So do we want to come back to that?
We can come back to it. We can come back to it once we get to the reveal.
Okay.
So Dewey's dead. And you're right, it was brutal, right? Like two knives and just this like opening him up.
Gutted him, just
completely gutted him from like bottom of the belly to your sternum, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it was bad.
Not like your normal like quick Ghostface kill. This was a slow.
It almost feels like something that would be done by somebody who knows you and is angry. That is like an angry personal kill, not just a, I'm going to stab you because I want to stab you.
Right, right. That or someone who's like mentally unstable.
Very, very mentally unstable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Tara and Sam and Richie, they meet Sydney, and Sydney tries to have Sam help her take down the killer. But Sam's like, nope, I'm getting the hell out of here. And
which is the smart move.
It is the smart move. Absolutely. Sydney,
the
and
police deal with this.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what they're paid for. Let the police do this. Right.
They're trained for this.
Exactly. So Sydney puts a tracker on their car so she knows where they are.
Apparently just happened to have one on in her back pocket.
I mean, she's Sydney fucking Prescott. Why wouldn't she have a tracker in her back pocket, right? That's like,
she's got a gun. So
that's right. Hey, you know what? If I've survived 4 attempts on my life from the same type of psychotic people over and over and over again, I would be Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. My ass would have like a fucking death trap in the basement.
I would have the most elaborate security system ever.
Right. Yeah.
Have to have fingerprint and eyeball scans to get into my house.
Floodlights with like spike pits and freaking, you know, like robotic, like death eagles and stuff that like circle around. Like if you don't scan your eye, like within like within 10 seconds
so of many seconds
foot on the property, then the fucking eagle will like bomb you and blow you up or something. Like there would be no FedEx delivery to our house. It would just because they'd be like, we can't go there. Everybody that goes there dies, guy. Can't do it. Just leave it at the office. Yeah. But Sydney, for her part, has a gun and she has trackers. So she puts a tracker on Sam's car so she knows where she is. And she and Gail follow them. But Tara forgot her inhaler at the hospital and they don't want to go back to the hospital. So they decide to go to Amber's house where Tara has a spare inhaler, conveniently enough, right? And when they get there, they see that there is a wake going on for Wes, which is
a party.
It's a party, but it's also a wake for Wes Craven. Obviously, a wake for Wes Craven. They have the big For Wes banner. There's at the end of the movie, after the credits or before the credits roll, they have a big For Wes before they.
Yep, they do.
So, and the character Wes is named for Wes Craven. Obviously,
yep, he is.
This is as much about him as it is about the character Wes in the movie. But there's a big party, and this is where it all starts to come down. People start dying off. So
it's before we get into all these extra kills and stuff and kills that happen, how come nobody like really yells out or screams for help when they're being attacked? And why does nobody grab the mask off the face? Like,
yeah, that's the one that always gets
none
me.
Of these.
Yeah.
It's like you could just reach up and grab that off. You're dying anyways at this point. Or if they're being chased, like nobody's like, I think maybe one person did in this one start yelling, but otherwise nobody else yells for help. I'm like, what do you think? You're just gonna, I don't know, get away on your own? I don't know. I always think, why aren't they yelling? I have no idea.
Well, okay,
now, I don't want that 70s girl yelling thing because that's annoying, but you know, just some kind of, you know, help me type thing.
I think that, you know, there's two schools of thought here. Number one is the idea that if you scream or if you, you know, yell for help, you're giving away your position.
Sure.
Number two is, well, if they did that, then it wouldn't be a good movie.
Well, you have to make dumb decisions, right?
You have to make dumb decisions, right? Like, this is a horror movie. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. Famously parodied in that ad for, I don't know what the hell the ad was for. It was they're being chased by a maniac.
I think it was like an insurance thing, yeah.
Whatever.
With the chainsaws.
They're like, well, let's get in the car that's already running and we can escape. And the other guy's like, no, are you crazy? Let's go hide behind all those chainsaws that are hanging in that closet over there. Yeah. So
I laugh every time I saw that commercial. That just tickled me for some reason.
That's what everybody does in the horror movie. They make the dumb decision, right? That's what, look, if they don't make the dumb decision, the plot doesn't get driven forward. And so that's just, right. That's just how it goes. I mean, you have to be okay with, they're going to make dumb decisions if you're going to enjoy the movie at all. Liv and Chad like have a fight. And so she leaves, and then Chad goes out to find her, and he gets killed by Ghostface. So that's another attempt at redirect to say, hey, Liv is the killer, right? Mindy gets attacked, but Sam manages to fend off Ghostface. And then they all start accusing each other of being Ghostface, right? Like they're all like, yeah. Oh, it's you. No, it's you. And then Amber's just like, oh yeah, it is me. And she kills Liv with a gun. She shoots her. And everybody runs. Everybody takes off. And then of course, Gail and Sydney arrive, and Amber pretends to be injured, but they're not buying it, right? Like, I love that moment where, like, she's like, oh, help me, help me. And I think it's Gail that's like, nah, that's a trap.
Yeah. One of them's like, you buying this?
Obviously a trap. And it seems like a trap. Yeah.
This is also where we get the reveal for the audience that this is Stu's house.
Right. Yeah. This is Stu's house. That's right. Yeah. When Sydney and Gail are tracking Sam and her group, they figure out that she's doubled back. And when they look at the monitor, they look at the tracking device monitor, it shows like the path to Stu's house. And like, that's where it starts to dawn on people, like, oh shit. Okay. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's interesting, because Stu's the only one, and we haven't talked about Billy Loomis, but still Stu's the only one from the original killers that doesn't show up in this, but he's there in spirit, right? He's the only one of the two that doesn't
show up. It's Stu's house and Billy's in Visions. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Billy's in Visions. Like, so that's the other thing. We'll talk about that later, because we haven't talked about it. It's almost as if it doesn't matter. So once Gail and Sydney realize that this is fake, Amber shoots Gail. So now we got two legacy characters down, but Gail's not dead. She's just injured. So after she shoots Gail, she runs back inside and Sydney goes after her. And Amber calls her as Ghostface, which I don't know how the hell does she have her number? No idea, but she's got it. Sydney starts shooting at doors just to make sure that there's nobody hiding behind the door. She's going to shoot at the doors, right?
How does she know like one of the good people ain't behind there? I don't think she cares at that point. She's just going to kill everybody.
She's going full on fucking Terminator at this point.
Yeah.
Right. She's just like, I'm going to murder this, because she says like she's got kids. She's not going to rest until this guy's in the ground. So she's going to murder whoever she has to murder to get this done. Right. I think they don't spend enough time with Sydney in this movie. And that's going to be a complaint that I have. But what they do give us is this like determination on Sydney's part that like, I'm not messing with this anymore. Right. Like,
right. I'm done with this.
Yeah. Like she even hangs up on quote unquote Ghostface, where like Ghostface is like, I'm going to do this. And she's like, yeah, I'm bored. And she hangs up, and like, as she's hanging up, Ghostface is like, no, wait. It's this great, like, fuck off thing. Like, you know, I know I've played this game way too many times. Right. So she's shooting doors, and she accidentally shoots Richie, who's hiding behind one of the doors. And he's like, oh, I'm hiding from the bad guys. She gets attacked by Ghostface out like from like another door as she's talking to Richie, and they fall over the balcony and onto the ground, onto the floor, lower level. So when they're all trying to get to the gun, Sam shows up, and she kind of can't believe that Richie's alive, but Richie reveals himself as the person who attacked Tara at the beginning of the movie and says that he's Amber's accomplice. They turns out that Richie is a disgruntled fan. He hated the way that Stab 8 changed everything, and he wants to remake Stab 8. Amber and Richie reveal that they are obsessively dedicated fans, and they wanted to provide the story that would be adapted And so they want to frame Sam as the villain since she's Billy's daughter. So it makes perfect sense. So Amber leaves to go get Tara, but turns out Tara was released by Sam. They tried to frame Tara too, but tried to make Sam think that Tara was involved, but Sam wasn't.
Richie did.
For it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Richie was really pushing to make her sister.
Yeah. He definitely tried to make that happen, but she didn't buy it. So she ended up untying Tara, and Tara ends up beating the crap out of Amber with her like crutch, which I thought was actually kind of fun. Sydney and Sam overpower Richie, and then Sydney and Gail fight Amber. Gail shoots Amber, and she ended up like covered in like some sort of like kerosene or something, and she ends up like, when she gets shot, she ends up like falling on the stove and like lighting on fire in like the most ridiculous.
I thought that was weird.
Yeah, it was like a really ridiculous, over the top kill, but whatever. Meanwhile, Richie is taunting Sam, talking about how he's, you know, how he's going to frame the whole thing, but she, egged on by her dad's vision, grabs Amber's knife and stabs Richie a bunch of times and then slices his neck, which she shoots him too, doesn't she,
at the very end afterwards, because that's when Sydney says they always come
right
back.
Yep,
so she shoots him after that, but she stabs him very, very violently.
Yeah,
slits like his throat.
Yeah,
it's really. And then really
you have
bloody.
Then you have the shot of like Billy Loomis in a mirror, right? In her vision of Billy Loomis, who's like smiling like, good girl. I'm like, oh my God, what?
Yeah, like, is he the big old A-OK thing?
Right? Yeah, like freeze frame, everybody's a happy at the end, right? Like, what the fuck was up with Billy Loomis? In this movie, Billy Loomis is like, they make him into this like heroic character. Like, he's trying to,
well,
like,
in a really weird way.
Right? Like, goddamn. Like, I don't know. But there's always, one of them always comes back, right? Somebody always comes back, and Amber does. Like, she's, like, half burned to death, but she, like, comes running around the corner and, like, they shoot her.
Tara does.
Tara shoots her. Yeah. But then, and so then we find out that Tara's alive. The Meeks twins are still alive. And Sam says thank you to Sydney and Gail. Gail says she's not going to write a book about this because she doesn't want the new murderers to gain notoriety, and said she's going to write a tribute about Dewey. And then that's the end. Okay, so I wanted to talk about a couple of things here. I called this out from the get-go that this was Richie. I knew it was Richie. I didn't know about Amber, but I knew it was Richie right off the bat. Like, it is my 1, 2, 3, 4... My fifth note down. Netflix, which is what they called him for a while. Netflix is the real killer. Not sure about motive yet. What about you? Did you figure out who it was right away?
No, but I usually don't in these. I usually have no idea. So,
well, okay.
But so they did give you a few hints to that. Maybe he was lying. They did point to some things. One of the things was he claimed that he'd never seen the Stab movies. But when they meet Dewey, he says he was a lot nicer in the movies.
Right.
Well, he didn't watch the movies, supposedly, until after that when he's in the hospital with Tara.
Right. Yeah, he's watching the Stab movies on his phone.
So he has at least seen the movies. They kind of give that little hint there.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's other little breadcrumbs, too, along the way that, you know, afterwards kind of think back and like, okay, there's this and that, but I don't usually pick up on that stuff. So
did you have a theory on who, because that's what this is. I mean, Scream has always been a whodunit, right? Mm-hmm. Did you have a theory on who it was?
I was thinking maybe Amber.
What led you to Amber at first?
I don't know. There was just something about her that I was like, I don't know about that chick.
Her only connection is that she lives in the house that Stu Mocker lived in when he was a kid. And
we don't even know that till later. So I don't know why I honed in on her, but I did. Hmm. And then I had no idea about the other. I figured there would be two.
Sure.
But I didn't know. I didn't think it would be Richie because I thought, okay, they did that the first time, the love interest. So I didn't think they'd do it again. But
right. Even when Richie was at the hospital when they were being attacked, I was still convinced that he was the killer.
Okay, I want to talk about that. So Richie is there. So mm-hmm. we know that he is not Ghostface at that point in time.
Right. It's Amber.
So that means Amber is Ghostface. You telling me this tiny little girl can stab Dewey the way she did and lift him up? That's, you got to take a lot of force and a lot of strength to do that. And you're telling me that tiny little girl did that?
She lifted with her legs, and she obviously did not skip leg day. So
I call BS.
What?
That was maybe not Amber Dewey, in there. So maybe there's a third person.
Maybe Dewey just doesn't weigh as much as you think he does.
I'm sorry. That
what
is,
are you trying to say about David
so
Arquette?
Unbelievable that she could have done that. No way.
Yeah, it was a little odd. But anyway, I still was convinced that it was Richie and that he had accomplice because I had or had an accomplice because I had at the point where that happened, I had written down, it's a double murder one like the original. Interesting, right? I was convinced that because it's a reboot sequel, they were going to retell the original Scream story, which is pretty darn close to what they did at first, but then they switched it up at the end, right?
Yeah.
But if you think about it, that's basically what the movies that do the fan service movies do, right? Like Halloween and The Force Awakens. Those movies are the ones that everybody was like, oh, this is the best. I love this. They didn't change anything. Like Force Awakens is basically a remake of A New Hope. Halloween is basically a remake of the original Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what, and when you think about it, that is what Richie is going for. He wants to have a remake that's also a reboot. So it's basically the same thing over and over and over again. This movie just takes toxic fandom down, right? They spend a lot of time showing people poo-pooing about like elevated horror, like The Witch and The Babadook and that sort of stuff. Like now The Babadook may not be my favorite movie, but it's definitely more inventive than any of these reboot remakes have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
What they've done is they've taken this toxic fandom and said, hey, you guys are wrong. So I love it. I absolutely love this. By the end of this movie, it becomes apparent that the movies that take a concept and turn it on its head, like the 2021 Candyman movie and The Last Jedi, are the innovators and should be recognized for their efforts. I absolutely love that about this movie. So I want to go back and I want to talk about Skeet Ulrich and Billy Loomis, the Billy Loomis character being in this movie.
Okay.
We talked already about how he just looked off, right?
Yep.
Like there was just something not quite right about the de-aging effect that they used. It was no Irishman de-aging, that's for damn sure. But how do you feel about Billy Loomis being the angel on the shoulder of his daughter after knowing what Billy Loomis was in that original Scream movie? How do you feel about him being the
I think angel that on the whole shoulder? Side is weird. I'm okay with her, I think, maybe having hallucinations, but the whole theming, what they were doing, like trying to make him a good guy and trying to lead her down the right path. That was right. Just bizarre.
Yeah. What does he know about the right path? Right. I mean,
he doesn't know anything about it. So obviously yeah. It's all her subconscious doing all of this.
Sure. Sure. And I get that. It just thematically.
The whole winky thing with the knife and stuff at the end. That was, it's like, what the hell is this? I don't know. That was just weird.
It was very, very strange. And I mean, if you want to have Billy Loomis back, he should be appearing to somebody that knows him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a problem with her knowing what he looks like. I don't have a problem with her knowing what he was wearing the night that he committed the last murders in the original Scream movie. That's easily figured out. What I have a problem with is, how does she know what he was like? How does she dream up this version of him who is very, very close to who he was in the original Scream movie?
Again, probably the movies, the Stab movie. You know, it's probably his, the characters. portrayal of the Stab movie and stuff like that.
Yeah, I suppose. I feel like
you could have just eliminated that whole thing.
Yeah, Billy
don't
didn't
have
need this.
Don't have Skeet Ulrich back in it. I know they were probably trying to include him somehow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't have these visions. The fact that she was his daughter, fine, very convenient to the story.
See, I think that it was quite inconvenient for her that she was Billy Loomis's daughter, right? Because she became suspect number one immediately.
Yeah.
What I did like about that is that it turns the other stuff on its head, right? It's the same thing that Candyman does, in that you have these characters that were one way in one movie that become something else in another movie, right? Like Billy Loomis's daughter would, in the minds of the toxic fandom, would obviously be the killer. It's the only thing that makes sense in the minds of toxic fandom, right?
Well, and but I don't even think that's that. I don't even think that's just toxic fandom, though. I think that's real life, because there's so many times that people use the excuse that it's the way I was raised, or it's the family I'm from, or something like that. So I think between just the general thoughts out there that a lot of people have now, I know not everybody thinks that, and that's okay.
Sure.
But the fact that she is the daughter, she is, you know, flesh and blood, have the same genetics as Billy Loomis, doesn't mean she's a bad guy. I right. like the fact that they didn't make her the bad guy.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
To basically say, just because of where you came from doesn't necessarily mean that you're automatically that way.
I'm not saying that the general population perceives that toxic fandom is the reason for that trope. I'm saying that this movie, within the conceit of this movie, toxic fandom's view of that trope is what they were going after. Do you know what I mean? Like,
okay.
this idea that because she is Billy Loomis's daughter, she should be the bad guy, right? It makes sense
right.
within this construct, this character of the toxic fan in the movie. And I, like you, I really enjoyed the fact that they turned that expectation on its head, because I think that there's a lot of people that just want, and we've talked about this with Ghostbusters Afterlife, people just want the same thing over and over and over again. And if you have the same thing over and over and over again, you never get any innovation, you know? Mm-hmm. There's never anything new. Scream worked because it was something new or newish. Like, there have been other movies that were aware, like self-aware, right? But it was the first mainstream movie to tackle the genre as a whole and say, hey, we are self-aware of this genre, not self-aware of, you know, the story itself, but just in general, the tropes of the genre, we're self-aware. And so I think that Scream being a trailblazer is an important thing to remember when watching this movie, because this movie is trying to say, we can't keep going along that path. We have to blaze another trail now too, right? Because if we keep going along that path, we don't get more Screams. We don't get more, you know, no, I don't mean like more movies in the series.
Series.
I mean, we don't get
the original.
We don't get another movie like Scream that's going to turn the industry on its head, or
right.
you know, give us a little bit of an, you know, a fresh injection of, you know, stuff like The Last Jedi did, like Candyman 2021 did. Stuff like that is what we need.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other trivia that you want to throw in, or any other final thoughts you want to have?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of trivia stuff. This is the first Scream movie not directed by Wes Craven. So he
right.
did direct the first four. We talked about the character of Wes and the title card at the end of the movie for Wes. But one thing we didn't mention was you hear birds chirping over that title card, and Wes Craven was a bird enthusiast and a bird watcher. So just another extra little thing there for that. Mason Gooding, who plays Chad Meeks, he wrote an essay about the first Scream while a student at NYU. He told the directors of the new Scream about his essay during his audition. They asked to read it, and he was later cast in the movie.
Cool. Also because he's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son too, I'm guessing. That didn't have anything against, you know, that didn't, wasn't a knock
that
against
might
him,
have,
right?
That might have helped, you know. I thought he did good. I'm not going to say that he's, you know, just got in on off of his dad's name, but.
Oh no, that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying that that probably helped, you know.
Yeah, sometimes knowing being related, that stuff helps, I guess. Like all previous four Scream movies, Roger L. Jackson is on the phone as the character of Ghostface.
Okay, so that's the same guy?
Same guy's done all of the movies now.
They modulate the voice differently then because it sounds different each time.
Yeah, obviously, he's older now. So, you know, your voice does change as you age. So
I agree, but I mean,
a little different.
I agree, but I'm talking about like from Scream 1 to Scream 2 to Scream 3 to Scream 4 to this movie, the voice changes every time. They modulate it differently each time. They have to because it never sounds the same.
It's similar. His voice. It's his voice.
That's his voice. They don't modulate it at all.
No,
it doesn't sound like.
I just watched a Comic-Con interview with him and he slips right into Ghostface and that is him.
And they don't put any kind of overlay over it.
I don't know if at some points they might. I don't know, but that is his voice.
They have to because they have to because he never.
Voice, it's one of his character voices.
Right,
he does.
Right, but they have to modulate it because every time you hear that voice, you never hear that voice in person. You never hear that voice coming out of a person's mouth. It's coming out of an electronic device every time. It's coming out of a phone. It's coming out of a cell phone. It's coming out of that little voice changer thing. Whatever it is, they are always modulating that. He may be able to do the voice. But they have to, like in the movies, they modulate that voice some way, shape, or form each time because it sounds different. Each movie sounds just a slightly different each time.
Well, I don't know about that. All I'm saying is I was watching an interview he did with a Comic-Con, a convention, and through the thing, he would slip in and out of that voice while he was answering questions. And that is he can do that voice. So.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure of that. I'm not challenging that at all. I'm just saying that there's some sort of like modulation going on there.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. And the last note I have here is the sisters, Sam and Tara, their last name is Carpenter, which is most likely an homage to Halloween director John Carpenter. And Sam is Billy Loomis's daughter. So if she had her father's last name, she would be Sam Loomis, which is a character in Halloween.
Yep. That's Donald Pleasance's character in Halloween.
All right. Yeah. And that's everything I've got for trivia. Just a few things.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. So I don't have any other notes. Do you have anything else that you want to say about this movie? Final thoughts that you want to throw out there?
No, I think I've gone over everything.
Okay. All right. Here we go. So keep. Rent or Erase, Jen? Where do you sit?
This one, we just saw it last night. So I haven't had a lot of time to really think it over and kind of go through. Because sometimes after you sit with a movie for a while, your opinion changes a little bit. My first gut was to go Rent. I feel like it was a good movie. Mm-hmm. Definitely not an Erase. It was a good movie. It was one I'd probably go back to again sometimes. But I didn't know if it was good enough to buy. But I am almost kind of leaning towards buying it and keeping it because it does have some interesting new takes. Even though it's the fifth movie in this installment, it still brings us something new. Not necessarily maybe all the kills and stuff, but again, the fact that it's kind of poking fun at itself. I do kind of like that. It you know, it kind of comes across as a little goofy, but it still is. It's kind of what this movie franchise is, you know. I'm gonna go and say let's keep this thing.
Okay, all right, fair enough. After we got done watching the movie last night, I sat with it for a bit because there are things in this movie that I absolutely love. The takedown of toxic fandom, the takedown of the idea that people that like elevated horror can't like slasher movies and vice versa. This idea that everything has to remain the same in order for it to be good. I loved that. I loved the little homages to things like Psycho and to Halloween and to, you know, pretty much everything that was in the slasher genre gets an homage in this movie. Things that I didn't like were like Billy Loomis being in there and Billy Loomis being considered kind of a hero in this. And the de-aging effects on Skeet Ulrich were Terrible. Which is bad, just bad. But when I sat and I thought about it, and I thought what I did was I thought about it and I compared it to other requels that I've seen. And where does it sit within that subgenre? This, I think, is one of the better requels out there. This sits up there with Candyman 21 and Halloween as one of the better requels, because it has something to say and it doesn't just give you fan service. It moves you forward in the story. It reexamines what we know about the past and it reframes it in a new way. And I think that's enough to put this into the keep category for me, because it's not just another retread. This, when we talked about Ghostbusters Afterlife, I said that this was that was a rent for me, and that depending on where they go from there could turn to a keep, right? This one, if this is the last Scream movie that they make, which I don't think it's going to be, at this point, I know that the directors have said, yeah, we want to make more. Depending on what they do with it, this movie could go to a rent. Because
the flip side,
this could flip, right? But for now, it's a keep because I like what it has to say about the genre as a whole. I like what it has to say about fandom and its interaction with its source material. I like what it has to say about it, even though I don't always like the way it says it. See, again, my comments about Skeet Ulrich and his appearance as Billy Loomis. So that's where I stand. So what are we doing next? Where are we going next?
All right, next week, you are going to cover the movie Old with Paul.
Oh, yeah. Paul, who is basically Jen 2.0 at this point, right? He's like
the improved Jen. Is that what you're saying?
No. Well, okay. No, that's not the way I want to go with it. Although, no, I. No. Yes. We'll just leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. Yeah. It's just Jen 2.0. No, not Jen 2.0. It's like sub Jen. He's like sub Jen. Like he's the second, like tier two Jen, right? It's like tier one Jen. You're number one. You're tier one Jen. He's like Jen down a tier, right? No nice offense recover. To Paul. Paul's a great guy. Paul's a great guy. He's one of my best friends, but Paul is no Jen.
You're not married to him.
I'm not married to him. I feel like I got myself in trouble here. So I'm just going to end the show. So we'll talk about the movie Old, the M. Night Shyamalan flick Old. Hoo boy. Next week here on the couch. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening to A View from the Couch. We value your feedback. Please consider leaving us a review on Podbean, iTunes, or your preferred podcast listening app.
You can reach us on Facebook by searching at A View from the Couch, on Twitter at View_Couch, or by emailing us at aviewfromthecouch@yahoo.com. Thanks again for listening. Bye.
See ya.